podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Loads to look back on, all four regional sides, professional sides, whatever you choose to call them, were in action this weekend, and that included a ding-dong derby at the Liberty Stadium with tries aplenty there. The Dragons managed to lose to the only side statistically worse than them in the league, or perhaps in the whole wide world. And Cardiff were in action out in Munster as well. We've also got a bit of transfer news, and we're going to look ahead to the Wales tour to South Africa with either excitement or doom, depending on how you're feeling. And helping me do all that, once again, it's Stefan Thomas. How are you, Steph?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, good, thanks. Great to have you. Great to have you back. Becoming a bit of a regular fixture, which is always good. And where do you want to begin? Should we start? I suppose the biggest of these games is probably the derby. So perhaps we'll start there. As much as anything, I have to say I have a bit of a downer on this league a lot of the time, but I genuinely really enjoyed that one as a neutral. It was a really exciting game of rugby, and it helped that I think there was a bit on the line. Obviously, the Scarlets' playoff ambitions, but then also also with it being a derby game as well. How did you enjoy that one?
Yeah, it was a cracking game of rugby, and I think it was a really good advent for professional rugby in Wales or regional rugby, whatever term you want to use. So we got a club representing the region against a regional rugby franchise. So club or region.
Pick the bones out of that one.
Yeah, but no, I think in all seriousness, it was a great game of rugby. I think we got to be honest. I don't think both sides weren't the strongest defensively, which probably helped the entertainment value. It was, obviously it was a game of both of two halves. I think the Scarlets, Dwayne Peel said after the game, he felt like the Scarlets were in control at halftime. They looked like they were about to. I don't think the Ospreys were ever out of the game, but it looked like the Scarlets were close to sort of wriggling free from the Ospreys at one point. They created a lot behind the scrum all game. I mean, they arguably should have been further ahead at halftime, but again, you look at the Scarlets, and I think that they're second in the URC table in terms of tries scored behind Leinster, which is impressive, let's be honest. But they're also second in the URC table in terms of tries conceded. And ultimately, it's the old saying, defence wins championships. And defensively, they're nowhere near it. And, we've gone on in the past that the Scarlets have a soft underbelly. They got a lot of very talented players. They have a very potent attack, as the try statistic shows. But whenever they're put under sustained pressure, they don't just leak a try or two. They implode, and it was the same yesterday. I was really impressed with the Ospreys because they were, as I said, they were always in the game, but you felt like the Scarlets were in the ascendancy and probably were the likeliest winners at halftime. But they spotted where the Scarlets were weak. They fixed their own shortcomings. And before the game, if you compared both packs, the Ospreys had a significantly stronger front five. Their scrum took the Scarlets to the cleaners, both the starting front row and the finishers. Arden Beard, I thought, was outstanding, really unsung hero. Arlene Wynn, still finding his feet, still finding his way back to fitness, but the unit, the front five unit, was significantly stronger than the Scarlets could handle. Dewi Lake, man of the match, but he was sensational. And they just put the Scarlets under pressure. They attacked them where they were weak, and the Scarlets imploded. And I think it was the right result in the end. And it was a very it was a really good advert for professional rugby in Wales.
Yeah, you talk about the implosion. It all seemed to hinge for me around that that soft penalty that, that Johnny Williams gave away, who, you know, otherwise, again, I thought he had another good game prior to that point, and I'm quite a big fan of his, but it just seemed a bit brainless when he'd been warned a couple of times by the referee to keep at it and then, you know, hoof the ball backwards. I thought that was only ever going to end one way, and from there, like you said, they leaked three tries straight away after that. How kind of pivotal do you think that moment was in the outcome of the game?
Very pivotal. I think they always say, don't they, that either 5 minutes or 10 minutes either side of half time a championship sort of winning moment. Not that I think the Ospreys are going to win the championship, but
if the championship is the Welsh Shield that we're all now glued to.
We count that one then. It's silverware at the end of the day. But yeah, Dwayne Peel said after the game, you know, they gave a couple of ridiculous penalties away. And that, you know, I think he didn't actually mention the specific one, but I think that that's one he was alluding to. It was a bad error. And they have been, you know, the architects of their own downfall in a lot of games this season. They constantly sort of shoot themselves in the foot. And the writing was on the wall against the Dragons or Rodney Parade in many ways. The scoreline suggests they won that game comfortably, but it was anything but. You know, they you know, to be second on the try scoring list behind Leinster is, you know, that's top end stuff. But you know, so we know what they can do, ball in hand, but defensively and up front in the front five. I mean, they were knocked from pillar to post yesterday, and they were for large periods at Rodney Parade as well. But they faced a Dragon side who, you know, just kept shooting themselves on the foot and kept making unforced errors, and obviously didn't have the firepower they had, so they were always going to get out of jail in that one, I think. But yesterday, they just came up against a team with just so much quality, and the Ospreys played really well going the scrum as well. It was Gareth Anscombe's best game, I think, since he's come back. He had an armchair ride, but you've still got to create. Scarlett's worked the Ospreys out in the first half, but with a blitz defence, but the Ospreys really, you know, really found a way around that, and that was because of Anscombe. I think Owen Watkin had a great game. He's really improving. Keelan Giles, I thought, was outstanding, as was Combier for the Scarlets as well. Hat-trick of tries, you know, still loses. He had a great game, but and Costello played well as well. But from a Scarlets perspective, you know, they brought in Hugh Hogan at the end of last season, at the start of this season. You know, he's come from Leinster, albeit he was contact skills coach, never coached a professional ever a defensive system, so that was always a risk, and so far just hasn't worked. And you know, if they are serious about kicking on and improving, then you know they do really need to sort that out, and whether that means they bring in another defence coach is down to them. But unless they sort their defence out, and I think Dwayne needs to be supported by experienced assistant coaches. They haven't got one experienced coach, let's face it. The only guy of real experience and quality they've got is Nigel Ashley-Jones, the head of physical performance, who's been in rugby league, has been with Saris and whatnot. But they really need, he needs, I think he needs a bit of support there. I think he's improved their attack. I think he's got the potential to be a top coach, but as I said, you know, they need to sort the defence out, and until they do that, then you know they're not really going to be challengers.
Yeah, I remember thinking at the start of the season that, you know, the defence was really, you know, was really leaky and porous then, and you thought, well, perhaps this is going to be a time, you know, to adjust to a new system and a new defence coach. But you're right, it hasn't seemed to get any better as the season's gone on, and to find yourself, you know, right at the end of the season shipping 50 points, it's yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of perhaps a lot of soul searching over the summer while they figure out how to sort that out.
I think as well, you know, you've got to look. You know, they've got probably one of the best second rows in the URC in Sam Lowson.
Yeah,
but he's and he played well yesterday. He caused havoc in the first half, but he's almost playing. He's almost fighting a lone battle. And, you know, they got some really good young props. Obviously, Elias is a good player, but they lost Jake Ball, right, who was an integral part of that squad. They knew he was going quite early in the season. You know, he's a blow for Wales as well, not just the Scarlets. You know, they also lost Tevita Rituva to Breve. Okay, he could be a bit of a liability, but he was a serious physical specimen. Right.
International quality lock, yeah.
Exactly. And they, you know, you know, it's my understanding that the second rows are, I think, they're the second most expensive, you know, position to recruit. So it's not easy, but they haven't, you know, they signed Tom Price, but, you know, they haven't really replaced, well, they haven't replaced Jake, have they? I mean, Fafita's a phenomenal signing, but I still think that they really need to recruit at lock. The front five as a unit isn't good enough to challenge the best teams. There are areas of their squad which are very, very good, but there are areas of the squad which are very weak, and second row is one of those. Fafita and Lousy's top quality pairing, but they can't play every week, and they also lack that grafting lock. Not that Lousy, for example, doesn't graft, but they need that physical, no. that four lock, as they say, the tight lock, as they say in South Africa.
Yeah.
And they haven't got that. The Ospreys have got that. Not just in Bia and Allen Wynn. Rhys Davies, I think, is a really good prospect, really physical prospect, and they just seem to breed them down there. But that's an area where Scarlets need to recruit if they're going to kick on.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the story of the Scarlets of kind of since regional rugby kind of came in, really. It's when they've had a front five that can compete, you know what they're capable of behind the scrum. You know, think back to when it all clicked under Pivac, and before that when it all clicked under Gareth Jenkins and that run to the semi-final. If they've got a front five who can compete, you know there's always going to be that kind of exciting rugby behind the scrum. But it's difficult. It's very, very difficult if there is that, I think as you refer to it, that kind of soft underbelly. It just means it just makes those big physical encounters nigh on impossible to win. So, yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't expect that much more recruitment between now and the summer, unless there's a little, you know, a gem you can find out there, which, you know, the Scarlets have a history of unlocking in Ball and Byrne and those kind of players. That's kind of, I think, what they're going to need to do. Someone who's not on the radar of anyone else, but that's a hard thing to do in the course of a couple of months.
Yeah, and it takes a bit of luck as well, doesn't it, really?
It does, yeah.
You know, Ty Byrne was almost like last cab off the rank, wasn't he? And they just hit gold. I can't really think of a better, like, money ball signing. That's a good term, isn't it? You know, Jake Ball, I think they signed, I think he was like 3-month contract from the Western Force Academy, and he turns into 50-cap international. But, you know, they're few and far between. And if you want to sign... If you want a forward platform, you need to spend money. And not, obviously they have. I mean, they've got a very, you know, they've got Fafita, who, you know, you would imagine would be on decent money, and he's sensational. But they need a bit more. But that's Welsh rugby at the moment. The money isn't there. You know, it's not just the Scarlets. No, when you've got like footballers like they've got, you're always going to have your moments in the season. You go in big one-off games, but you can't, like, unless you've got a serious front five, you can't, you know, you just can't consistently win games. They're a dangerous team, but they're not really a formidable team. I think the Ospreys have probably got a better platform for success at the moment, you know, with their pack, just in terms of the way they're set up. They're well coached by Toby Booth, but their problem is they can't get their best team on the park every week. You know, but yeah, I think the Ospreys, you know, you'd expect them to beat the Dragons next week, and then it's down to the last game against the Bulls, which you know, would be interesting.
Yeah, well, let's take a look at the Ospreys now. I've had this question in from Gary Mason, which says, after the Ospreys went to South Africa, Toby Booth said that they have to change the way they play in order to compete. After the last 2 weeks, is this what we should expect from them going forward?
I think it probably is, yeah. But as I said, I think the problem with the Ospreys is I do think they lack depth. When every Welsh team's got their strongest team on the park, I think they're the best. You know, and I think in terms of the way they play. So if you look at the start of the season, so they've had some really impressive wins. Actually, they beat Munster home, they beat Ulster home, they beat a very good Edinburgh team at home. Should have beaten Sale. They beat themselves that day, I think. But in all those games, they won those games through sheer bloody mindedness, because they've got a pack, because they can win an arm wrestle against any side. But their attacking game wasn't quite there. because, you know, for all Stephen Myler's qualities, he's a very experienced player, he's a great goal kicker, he's a great tactician, but he's never, even in his prime, his younger days, he's never been an attacking
yeah,
term.
Running term,
let's,
is he, yeah.
Let's face it, I'm not saying that to have a dig at him. He is what he is, isn't he? And they know that, you know, Josh Thomas has some potential, but the key to the Ospreys in developing the game and playing the way they are is Anscombe. Toby Booth is spot on. You know, when Anscombe was fit again, people were, you know, all us journalists, you know, we have to ask the question. Obviously, we were asking about Wales and, you know, do you think he should be back in a Wales squad? And Toby Booth is, you know, rightly telling us, hang on a minute now, lads, you know, he's come back from an injury which probably should have ended his career. So less, you know, it's a phenomenal achievement just to play again. So it was always going to take time, and, you know, he struggled in a lot of games, and, you know, you've seen the odd glimpse, but on the whole, he struggled. But yesterday, or on Saturday then, you know, yes, he had an armchair ride, but that was like the Anscombe of old. His kicking was phenomenal. You know, he's just so much peripheral vision. He controls the game. And when he's at his best, it just gives the Ospreys just the possibilities out wide, the greater. I think Keelan Giles as well, having him back at full tilt, a guy with that pace, it's just frightening pace, you know, is a big difference. I think Owen Watkin, Pivak was right, you know, he wasn't good enough in attack, but he's improved. You know, and obviously George North's coming back now as well. So I think they are developing quite nicely, but I think what's going to stop them, like, kicking on next year is the same thing, isn't it? The lack of depth when their internationals are away. When they got the strongest team in the park, they should be in the URC top five playoffs competing to win, but, you know, they haven't got the depth that Leinster have got, the Southampton teams have got, Munster got, and that's what it is, really. And unfortunately, that's out of Toby Bull's hands, but I think he is doing a good job as head coach.
Yeah, no, I think I'd probably agree with all of that. I think the back row is the one, because, like you know, mentioned about second rows, I think they've got, you know, they've got some really good second rows down there as well, you know, which gives them a bit more depth there. It's the back row, like you say, when the international's away and you're likely to lose Jack Morgan. Obviously, Tipperick's been injured all season, but if he's away with the national squad as well, there are some really good youngsters in there. I think particularly Harry Deaves has got a bright future ahead of him. But it does seem a little bit makeshift, you know, with players like Will Griffiths and Morgan Morris having to kind of slot in and do different roles. Obviously, Morris tends to do that eight role, but sometimes he's appeared at seven. Griffiths has done kind of four, five, six, occasionally eight as well. So I think it's that area, you know. But like you say, that's depth is a very, very difficult thing, especially when you've had Lydiot and Tipperick out for a year now.
If I was picking Ospreys player of the season, it would be toss of a coin probably between Griffiths and Morris, and maybe Reece Webb would come into it, because these guys are there week in, week out.
Like, yeah.
Morris isn't, there's nothing flashy about him, but his work rate is phenomenal. You know, he's so physical, he just gets through so much work, he's good at the breakdown, he carries hard, he's technically good. Griffiths, very good liner forward, you know, again, you know, puts in a huge shift in defence every single game, you know, they consistently keep standards high, you know, maybe. You know, are they international class? I don't know, but I think for the Ospreys, I think they've just been stalwarts really of this season, and moving on, moving forward, you think that they're going to be really important for them. So yeah, you know, they obviously have their star international players, but these guys are the ones that help them beat Munster and Ulster and whatnot. So yeah, I think those are two unsung heroes of their pack, and Nicky Smith as well, who should be in the Wales squad.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. I just find it quite baffling at the moment. I think, to be honest, if I was picking that side, which, to, you know, that Wales side, which I think is a great relief for everyone else that I'm not, I think Nicky Smith would be literally the first name on the team sheet. I don't get it. I just think that, you know, he gives you a good option over the ball. His scrummaging is sound, and, you know, he carries hard and gets through a load of work. I don't quite get, you know, obviously Wyn Jones is a player I really admire, but he's had his fitness troubles and form troubles this year. Gareth Thomas is solid. Rhys Carey has a huge amount of potential, but still we know kind of that while his scrummaging gets better, that's the area that's going to hold him back internationally. I just think right now, Nicky Smith is definitely the right option. So I've found it really, really bizarre that he's not featured for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the Ospreys have had one of the best scrums in the URC this season. I actually really like Gareth Thomas. I think with Wyn Jones out, I would expect him to start against the box. But I would have had Nicky Smith, and well, maybe he will, but I personally have Nicky Smith on the bench. Good scrummager, really good over the ball, good carrier. Maybe, you know, he's not the biggest. That could count against him at international level. But you can't honestly tell me that he, you know, you look at some of the players that are in the squad ahead of him. It's nonsense, isn't it? You know, when you look at regional rugby this season, look at the form he's in. He's better than a lot of the players that have been picked by Wales this season. He's been in better form than Wyn Jones. Definitely been in better form than Rhys Carey. Yeah, I think it's pretty, you know, it's gone under the radar a bit, really, but he's been one of the form players in the country. He's quite an experienced international player as well, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, got lots of experience.
You know, just a baffling one, really. And, you know, South Africa obviously is a totally different level, but he should be. Is he in the top three best Welsh loose heads? Yes, absolutely, especially with Wyn Jones injured. So, yeah, I would be baffled, really, if he wasn't selected to tour. But my gut feeling tells me he won't go.
Yeah, I have the same feeling as you. We've had a couple of mentions, and you mentioned the man of the match, Dowie Lake, as well. I had this question in from Leon Rees, who says, is Dowie Lake Wales' starting hooker now after his performances in the Six Nations and now for the Ospreys? What do you reckon to that one, Steph?
I think if I was picking the team, luckily I'm not, but if I was picking the team to face the Springboks, I'd start him. But I do think, you know, I just love the Eddie Jones term, you know, finishers. You do wonder, like, is he gonna make a better impact off the bench than starting? That's debatable. But I think Ryan Elias and Dowie Lake, I think they've, you know, neither are probably going to play 80 minutes. They're both going to play their part in the tour and beyond. I think those two are clear for first choice hookers now. I think Elliot Dees has been injured and he's fallen behind. So I think, yeah, I think Dowie Lake, I think if I was picking, I would start him. Because I think, you know, if you look at South Africa, Elias is pretty physical, but Lake is just so dynamic on top of it. And he's one of the only players, I think, that can go toe-to-toe and match the Springboks. But you look at their two hookers, you've got Umbanambi and you've got Marks. They're just absolutely freaks.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
Physical freaks, and they offer so much. You know, over the ball, they're so dynamic. And Lake reminds me a bit of Malcolm Marks as well, because he started off as a back rower. He just gives him a different dimension to his game. And in the past, you know, his throwing in was just not good enough. But the Ospreys have really invested. They've invested in a coach to help his throwing in. And it was faultless yesterday. And it's been getting better and better all the time. And if you look at the game we lost against Italy, which was awful, but he was, you know, probably one of maybe the only shining light out of that game. So, yeah, I think Elias and Lake are the top two by a country mile. But, yeah, I think if I was picking the team, Lake would be the starter. And I think he's got potential to be a world-class hooker, not just a good hooker.
Yeah, I would definitely be picking him. And I think with that one eye over there on the long term as well, not that this is in any way a development tour. As we said the other week, you know, there's a serious danger of a hiding over there. But looking at him and where he is now in his career, and I think he's one of those young players coming through who's got the potential to grow and grow and grow and be a real, you know, a real great for, you know, a real great quality international player. And it is just, I think the way the game is now, you need front row forwards who can really put in a shift when it comes to carrying as well as in the tight. And he is, like you say, that kind of that experience that he's got in playing in the back row early on in his career. I think there's real X factor with him, and I think he's going to grow and grow and become the long term answer at two, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think, you know, future British Lion, British and Irish Lion, if he stays fit and keeps improving. As I said, what was holding him back was throwing in. But, yeah, you know, I asked him in a press conference during the Six Nations, and he actually hasn't been playing hooker for very long. It's only about, like, 4 years, and obviously when you add COVID into it as well, which is like 18 months out of his career, you know, he was a back rower and they converted him to hooker. That's a big change, that is. Technically, that's just, that's huge. And, you know, the fact that he's originally a back rower is going to help him, because it just gives him such a point of difference over everyone else. You know, just his work over the ball in terms of jackling, just how dynamic he is in the loose. And, you know, you're watching him yesterday, and yes, Scarlett's haven't got a great pack, but he's just running into brick walls and making serious meters and always looking to offload. And, you know, they say the best way maybe is to unlock defences these days is tip-on passes, and he's really good at that as well. And he's just got everything, hasn't he? As long as his throwing in carries on improving, then I think you're looking at the Test Lion hooker, or certainly one of the three hookers when the Lions tour Australia in 3 years' time.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to use that as the quote for the show, Steph. I'll be using that one on the tweet on Monday morning. Just to wrap up on this game, and still looking ahead to South Africa, we had this question in from Jake, which says, Combeer and Costello to tour this summer. What do you reckon? And actually, I would chuck into this Giles and Anscombe as well, because I think we've got, there were so many fascinating matchups on that game. You know, the kind of both, you know, players on both sides putting in some big shifts.
Yeah.
I'd love to get your take on, you know, on who are the kind of the touring outside halves and wingers.
So I think if you look at the profile of fly half in Wales, so Big Gerrish's first choice, end of discussion. There's no doubt there. There were question marks over Anscombe. I think he, purely because of his injury and whether he was ever going to be the same again. But I think he answered a lot yesterday, albeit after admit he had an armchair ride, which he won't have in South Africa, but you would take him because he's just so much quality, so much experience. But Callum Sheedy, I don't think, you know, he's played fairly well for Wales, but I don't think he's been that good for Bristol this season. I think he's been very inconsistent. And I'm just worried that when the box get on top, which is inevitable, you know, if Bigger goes down, if Anscombe goes down, I'm worried about, you know, whether he's quite there at the moment. You know, Jared Evans is a naturally wonderful, wonderfully gifted footballer. But, you know, Pivak has always questioned his game management. And I do understand where he's coming from, if I'm being honest. There are a lot of games where, you know, when he's on the front foot, he's a wonderful player, probably the most naturally gifted 10, you know, on a par with Patchell, maybe, that Wales have got. But there are still big question marks over his game management in big games. But who I really, really like, and I think, you know, Anscombe overshadowed him yesterday because the Ospreys won, but I thought Sam Costello was outstanding yesterday in both halves in many ways. Because in the first half, I mean, obviously he's an attacking threat to begin with. You know, he obviously is great tackled by Keelan Giles to keep him out early on. You know, he's got a lot of vision. You know, he's putting people through holes, he's playing like really close to the game line and putting people through holes. Two great touchline conversions. And even in the second half, you know, nothing he could have done. The pack's getting stuffed. You know, he's very brave in defence, too brave in defence. But what I like about Costello is, and what separates him maybe from Sheedy and Jared is, and I'm not knocking these players, they're perfectly capable players who can play international rugby, but where Costello is better is that when things don't go his way, when the tactics, when the overall game plan isn't going to plan, excuse the pun, he has the ability to think on his feet and change it under intense pressure. You know, one of his former coaches, actually, at age grade, was telling me that when he first signed for Scarlets, an ex-international, was saying that when this kid's under pressure, he's like Dan Bigger 10, 12 years ago, with a bit more of an attacking threat. He's very mentally tough, really mentally tough. Nothing fazes him. You know, he's too, you know, they have to hold him back in defence. He's too brave in defence, but he's got a good balance, great kick game, can play really conservatively. conservatively, but he takes, he, you know, he brings his backs into the game as well. I just think when you're playing out in South Africa, realistically, you're probably not going to want to play him in South Africa because you want to start bigger and have Ants coming to bench and maybe even start Ants the other way around like they used to in Gatland. Because obviously, the pack's against stuff, it's not going to help who's 10, whoever's 10. But if one of those got injured, I would have more confidence in Costello, albeit he's never played international, than the other two, as in Evans and Sheedy at the moment. So I think that looking ahead to the World Cup, I think that Sam Costello could potentially be a better option than Sheedy and Jared Evans. So I would be looking to build Costello up as the third choice, somebody even who could be in the match day 23 for the World Cup. Whether the World Cup's too soon, maybe. But looking ahead to the World Cup after, I think he's got the potential to be Bigger's long-term successor. So he'd be, if I was picking a squad, he'd be going.
Interesting. Right, seems like a perfect time to take a quick break. After that, we will be looking back at the Cardiff defeat away at Munster, and we'll be looking at yet another Dragons defeat, this time away at Zebra. Right, all that coming up, but first we're going to take this quick break. Into the second half now, Steph. As I said, Friday night, the Cardiff side went over to Munster. It was another defeat for them. But I would say an improved performance, but it's still, what's that, five defeats on the spin now for Cardiff? Hard to know whether you can kind of read too much into the positives there. What did you make of that game?
Well, they were obviously a lot better than they had been. Munster were not at full strength, albeit, you know, there's no such thing as a weak Munster team. You know, I think Cardiff showed a lot in attack, as they have all season, really. They scored some excellent tries. I thought Lilo had a really good game, his best for a while.
Yeah.
But ultimately, similar to Scarlets in many ways. Obviously worse because they got tuned by the Scarlets twice, but they have a very soft underbelly, don't they? The front five's not good enough, you know, set piece isn't good enough. And when teams come direct at them, you know, when you analyse Cardiff, you know, when you analyse the best teams, sometimes you have to work really hard to find a weakness. But with Cardiff, it's easy. It's easy to see where the strength is and where the weakness is. The strength is contact area over the ball, breakdown. And they're very good over turnover ball, especially in the counter-attack. They're very potent attacking team. But the weakness, again, is very obvious. Front five and Munster shoved it up the jumper, and they just couldn't handle that level of physicality. So, you know, it was a gutsy performance. It wasn't a bad performance, but I just don't think they've got the personnel, which is the worrying thing, to really improve with this group of players, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Obviously, it coincides with a signing this week of Lapeti Tamani, Tongan and Australian international, who comes in. Played a lot in the back row, but we're kind of told that he's expected to play in the second row for Cardiff. What do you make of that as a recruit?
I think that the first thing you've got to ask when you sign any player is he better than what we've currently got? And the answer to that is a resounding yes. I think he's, you know, he's an experienced player. He's a Wallaby. You know, he's an experienced Wallaby, not just a one-cup wonder or anything like that. You know, he's a very physical player. He's not a typical bruiser lock, is he? You know, he's a back rower to begin with, more than second row. So he likes to play in the wide channels. But ultimately, as I said, he's better than what they've currently got. And he comes from, he's had a lot of experience with the Wallabies. He's played for La Rochelle, he's played for Toulon, top 14 is probably the most physical league in rugby union. I say union because NRL is the most physical in both codes. But he's just got, he's just going to bring a lot of experience, really good line of forward as well. And I just think, is he at his best? At his best years past him, probably. But, you know, as I said, he's still better than anything Cardiff have got. So from that point of view, I think it's a good signing. And injury, you know, as long as he doesn't get injured, then he'd be available throughout the season, which is a big plus. And as we're on this point, it really annoys me. Like when I see, like when I saw Cardiff announce the signing, and I think it's a good signing on the whole. You got an element of fans. They're not really fans. A lot of people are like, oh, it's blocking development, this and that. That's just total crap. It's nonsensical. You know, ultimately, if you had, say you had 23 Welsh qualified players under 25, and you put them out against Leinster, they're just going to get slaughtered, aren't they? You're not developing players by throwing young Welsh players to the slaughter. They have to be supplemented by quality, you know, real quality experienced players. Obviously, the Welsh internationals are away for a lot of the season, so it's very difficult for them. They do their best, but it's difficult for them to act as mentors. But you asked Justin, I remember asking Tipperick like 4 years ago in a press conference about Marty Haller, the ex-All Black player for the Ospreys, and he said, you know, I wouldn't be the player I am without him. You know, Sam Warburton has raved in the past about the likes of Xavier Rush and Mama Molotika. You know, ask Foxy, ask Jonathan Davis about Regan King. You know, these top foreign players, you know, they are invaluable in terms of developing players. You know, this is what the critics don't understand, that they can help develop players. They up the standard in training. You know, they just improve everything. Of course, there's been a lot of rubbish signings as well because of the financial constraints. Yes, but this is an experienced Australian international. You know, Vaia Fifita is a multi-cap All Black joining the Scarlets. These players, you know, are you telling me that Jack Price and Morgan Jones won't learn off Vaia Fifita? You know, and likewise with some of Cardiff's younger second rows and back rowers with Lopez and Timani. It really annoys me, and I just think, you know, Sam Lowse is another excellent player with the Scarlets. You know, I've already mentioned Regan King, the influence he had on Jonathan Davis. So I think signing the right quality calibre of non-Welsh qualified player is absolutely integral to developing young Welsh players. And if anything, having good non-Welsh qualified players is more important than having senior Welsh internationals, because they're there throughout the season and their main priority isn't another team. It's their primary employer, which is Scarlets, Cardiff, Dragons, Ospreys. So I think getting good non-Welsh qualified players should be a priority. And I think that the pro team should be allowed to sign more of them, in my opinion.
I completely get it. You know, if it was just a question, you know, if it was like Premier League football, you know, and it was 11 foreign players in the side, and it's, you know, it's based solely around who's got the money to sign them, then yeah, of course, you know, I think that would have a hugely detrimental effect on the Welsh national side. But you're right, when the quality recruits come in, it makes a massive impact. There's a couple I was going to add to that list. You've mentioned it, a lot of them there. We've asked a number of ex-Ospreys in the past who played in that kind of Galactico era, and the one player they always come back to is Philo Tiatia, who again was just, you know, and again it was his attitude towards training and the intensity and the standards that were expected, which helped a lot of players develop there. And Ben Blair for Cardiff as well, you know, that must have had an effect, you know, watching a player like him train, you know, with a young Lee Halfpenny in the squad. You know, I know Halfpenny was an obsessive trainer himself, but you know, I'm sure that would have had a positive impact. And you're right, you recruit quality signings. Absolutely, having a player like Timani, is that going to help the likes of Teddy Williams? I'm sure it will. I agree. I've never understood that argument that it's blocking development. It's not like, you know, it's not like you get to pick your first 23 every week of the season anyway, is it? You know, it's players will get a chance. I'd much rather there are quality international players there making the sides competitive, and I think that aids development.
Yeah, like a good friend of the podcast, Kai Griffiths, was telling me a couple of years back, you know, about Fia Tia Tia and just, you know, the Ospreys, the Galacticos period, as the press like to call it. You know, they had one of the best teams in Europe at the time. You know, they had basically probably about three quarters of the Welsh squad, obviously. You know, they were away for most of the season, and Tommy Bowe was away as well. But Fia Tia Tia, you were saying, like, Fia Tia Tia is just like, you know, he's such an influence on the younger players, because the Celtic League or Magnus League, whatever it was called back then, the way the season structured means that it's not your senior internationals that as in your Welsh internationals that win new tournaments, so used to win Welsh mm-hmm. teams tournaments, it's almost your foreign players, like your Tiaters, your Haulers, your Jerry Collins, Jason Spice, one of the best foreign signings in Welsh rugby history. He was a tremendous competitor and leader, and he was telling me like Tiatia just set the standard every week, and he used to just, the youngsters just used to like, you know, just feed off him and improve, and he'd, you know, he just showed them what level you had to be at to sort of to be an international player and to be a top end player. And unfortunately, we haven't got enough people like that in Wales at the moment. So yeah, it just gets on my nerves. It's just very very ill informed, isn't it? When people criticise the Welsh team signing of, you know, non Welsh qualified players, they don't criticise the English or the Irish clubs or provinces when they do it. So you know, educate yourself is my message.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you on that one. As we come towards the end of the show, let's take. I'm obviously a lot less keen to talk about the Dragons this week than I was last time you were on, Steph. I'll quickly give you my assessment of that. I was going to say
last time I was on the show, you couldn't wait to talk about it, and
now you just
brushed under the carpet. So
you know why, Steph? Because it's like that's it. Hopefully they've arrived at work now and switched and got out of the car and switched their phones off. I'll tell you why I was so keen to talk about it last time, because it's a once in a bloody blue moon occurrence that you can be kind of optimistic. You know, I thought, looking back at their recent performances, they were much improved against Gloucester. They got a win away to the Scarlets. They should have got more out of the game at home to Scarlets. But as for losing away at Zebra, it's just to get, you've got to grind that result out. I know they were missing Rowlands and Wainwright and Moriarty and some influential players, but and obviously depth is going to be an issue. But if you take those two kickable penalties just before half time, one about on 29 minutes, one on 35 minutes, something like that. Take those two, you win the game. You know, you just keep the scoreboard ticking over. There has to be a realisation either within the coaching or within the players that it's a massive gamble to kick for the corner if you're the Dragons. I generally think it's a bigger gamble than people give it credit for now. That, you know, 5 years ago every side was just to keep the scoreboard ticking over. I don't quite understand what the rationale behind always going for the corner is. I know there was this kind of period where it became, you know, virtually every side had a good driving line out from 5 yards out. So it became, but defences have got wiser. And also, I think that holding the ball up over the line now, which happens a lot more frequently, means that, you know, you then, the defending side get an opportunity to clear it. Whereas before you'd have got an attacking scrum out of that. So I don't know, but if you're the Dragons, just play sensible rugby, take the points. They were two incredibly kickable kicks. And that's 6 points that just edges you kind of slowly out of sight. And it's always going to be a nervy game. Know that you'll get another opportunity at some point in the game. I also thought it was not that it was the referee's fault that the Dragons lost this game, but how they can go to the TMO for a dangerous tackle. It was clearly a no arms tackle from the fullback when the Dragons were down to 13. And go, oh no, yeah, it wasn't dangerous. It was on the chest, agreed, but it was clearly no arms, which is a penalty. And, you know, just moments like that obviously don't help. But Dragons, no one's to blame but themselves.
Yeah, I agree. They just imploded, isn't they? And time and time again, like against the Scarlets in many ways, you know, the game of Rodney Craig, they put themselves in a position to win. Adam Warren's try at all the momentum, and they just shot themselves in the foot, gave the Scarlets an opening, and they took it. And it was a similar yesterday, you know, those two yellow cards. And, you know, I think it was Lewis Jones that slapped the ball forward once as well. Zebra obviously scored, but could have been three yellow cards, to be honest. It just, they're just very poor. And, they haven't got the playing budgets of the other teams, but they still should be doing a little bit better, as I think you said the other week. And, you know, Dean Ryan has obviously recruited very heavily for next season. So I think, there won't be many excuses left come next season, if I'm being honest, Jed.
No, look, that game, you've got to win those games. If Dean Ryan loses that equivalent fixture next year, then he's toast, I think. You know, they've got to get out of the traps incredibly hard. I don't see the point now. You know, there are massive questions for Dean Ryan to answer, but I don't see the point in booting him out now when he's brought in, very, like we said the other week, very Dean Ryan type players, you know, grafters who are going to come in and do a job. And I think it has improved. You know, I think to go back to your point about Tamani, you know, is he a better solution than what's currently in the squad for Cardiff? Yes. You know, is Lonsdale an upgrade for in the second row? Yes. Is Max Clark an upgrade on, you know, on the current options in the centre, when especially when you've got injuries? Yes. You know, is Hanrahan a better option than basically no one, because Sam Davies is the only person who plays 10? Yes. So, you know, the squad is there, but he's got to get a tune out of them straight away. You know, there can be no, you can't be sat there in December with no wins. You've got, they've got to pick off some wins at home early doors, and the pressure is definitely on. They're going to have a hard pre-season.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've got to get some results.
I totally agree with you. You know, they've upgraded in a lot of positions. You know, he said in his post-match interviews, he basically said a lot of players just, he's inferred that a lot of players have had their last chance and that they've let him down. And that, you know, I think he said he needs to drip feed the younger players in, from the audio I listened to anyway after the Zebra game. So he's had enough, I think, of a lot of players, and he's recruited players in his mould, you know, the way he wants the team to play. Mm-hmm. CEO Tompkinson, I'm excited about. But ultimately, as you said, you know, nobody, as a Dragons fan, I'm sure you're not expecting them to win anything. But I think you're probably, am I right in saying you're expecting them to just get a few more wins, be a bit more competitive? Because if they don't improve next season, I think, you know, they do have to look at an alternative head coaches or director of rugby.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. If I was looking at those games we've just spoken about now, you know, and this is at the start of the new season, you know, if you ran a Gloucester side close, you beat the Scarlets once, you know, you ran them close in another, and you beat Zebra away, you know, even if it was a grinded out victory, then you'd be looking at that saying, that's a decent set of games, we're moving in the right direction. It's games like that away, you've got to have the nous to get over the line regardless. And, you know, I think it's one thing to say, you know, to complain about resources, and that is definitely a part of it, and not having the squad depth. But in a game like that, where you've had the opportunities and you simply haven't taken them, then I don't think you can say. And it, you know, let's be honest, it's Zebra. They haven't won a single game all season, so it's not good enough. And things have got to change. Got to change really, really quickly.
Yeah, I totally agree. As I said, I think if results don't improve next season, and I mean, you know, if they, I think they need to, like, you know, set the sights a bit higher as well. You know, the culture needs to improve. I think, you know, you need to look at, like, you know, 7 wins, maybe something like that. If they don't reach that, then I think they need to make a change, quite frankly.
Mm. Yeah, I think most people would agree with that, and I certainly would. But that brings us nicely to the end of the show, Steph. Been great to have you on again. And no doubt we'll be in touch with you. Are you heading over to South Africa to cover the games?
TBC at the moment, to be honest.
TBC.
Perhaps. All right. Probably.
Cool. Well, yeah, we'll no doubt get you on for your analysis around those fixtures and towards the tail end of the URC season as well. So thanks for joining us today. Thanks to everyone for listening. And finally, as always, a big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great quality coffee, you can do that by going to socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, we'll be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon.
Podcast Network.